Tribute. The Name on the Bench by David Hendon.
James Grant died 3 days after he turned 40. I know this because they dedicated a bench in the park to him. I was sat there in the lunch hour eating the overpriced tuna and sweet corn bap I'd bought from the work canteen and noticed the little plaque. It said, "In memory of a loving husband, father, son, and brother." The full gamut. But it was his age that leapt out at me. 40. I'm 39. I didn't know James Grant. I didn't know how he'd died. It would have been a bit much, I guess, to go into intimate details on a plaque. Plus, the charges probably go up the more letters you add. I thought about him, though, all that afternoon. 40. Isn't that when life's supposed to begin? When I got home in the evening, Belinda was out at one of her yoga classes. I poured a glass of wine and hit Google. There were 457 million references to James Grant. I thought it prudent to narrow the search a little and typed in James Grant dead. Nothing of any relevance came up. I was confused. The plaque suggested this man was much loved, but it seemed he didn't merit a mention on the internet, and if you don't exist there, you surely don't exist at all. There were some Facebook accounts under his name, so I had a look at those, but I couldn't find a likely match. There surely would have been tributes and outpourings of grief, but I couldn't see any of that, so I went to Twitter. There was a James Grant who ran a small biscuit company in Redcar, and another who taught chemistry in Leamington Spa. They both looked about the right age from their photographs, but I ruled them out on the grounds that they were still tweeting, very much from the land of the living. After an hour or two, I gave up and opened another bottle. The first time I encountered death, I was 6 years old. I dimly remember my father telling me that Nan had passed away. That's how he put it, passed away. I had no concept of what he meant at first, believing she had, at the age of 87, decided to move house. When the penny finally dropped, it was hard to comprehend. One moment she had been there, and the next, she wasn't. Dad explained she had gone to a much better place. When I was 12, Mum died. Breast cancer. Dad didn't say anything about a better place then. He just cried solidly for 3 months and developed a drinking habit which killed him in his 40s. So it's not like I've been immune to death. But there was something about the passing of James Grant which left me feeling anxious. I needed to know who he was. I needed to know how he died. I didn't mention it to Belinda. We hadn't exactly been getting on since her sister's wedding. We'd argued that day. I suppose it didn't help that I was sick over her mother. I tried to explain that someone must have spiked my drink, but she said I was drinking too much again and needed to cut down, that I'd made a fool of myself and of her. Drinking too much. It was a wedding, and I still maintain someone slipped something into my glass. Or maybe it was something in the food. Prawn cocktail has never agreed with me. I sat on the bench again the next day. Scarlett Sheridan was on her lunch break too and came and sat next to me. She was one of the partners, but quite approachable. She was eating wasabi and drinking from a bottle of still water. We made small talk. 40, I said. She didn't follow, so I gestured to the plaque. He died when he was 40, I added. Oh, she said, that's very sad, isn't it? But then she turned the conversation round to our year-end projections. James Grant's life had been superseded by a spreadsheet. Belinda noticed I was brooding about something later that evening. She was laughing her head off at a TV show where 10 celebrities have to live in kennels like dogs. What's wrong, she said, you're not laughing. I couldn't tell her. I couldn't explain why James Grant's death had impacted me so much. I didn't know myself. I wasn't friends with him. It's not even as if he was a pop star or an actor or a footballer, someone famous who I could mourn with the rest of the population, who I could tweet heartfelt messages about, joining in the public circle of grief that makes us all feel somehow better. No, he was just a name on a plaque. Did anyone else who sat on that bench even notice it? A thought struck me just as I was going to sleep. The electoral roll. I got out of bed. Belinda was halfway between sleep and consciousness and made a half-hearted attempt to ask me where I was going. "To fetch a glass of water," I said, and closed the door behind me. I went to my computer, fully expecting the electoral roll to be available within a few clicks of the mouse. It wasn't. But it said you could view it in your local library. The next day, I skipped lunch on the bench and went along to look up James Grant on the register. There were three listed in this area, and I carefully noted down the addresses of each. At that point, I didn't have a plan. I just wanted information. On the way home from work, I stopped off at the pub. I needed to think. I had a drink. Well, a few drinks. I decided I would call on each of the addresses and what, demand to know if a James Grant had lived at this property and if he was still alive. And if he wasn't still alive, how he died. What business was any of this of mine? I had a few more drinks and got home late. Belinda wasn't happy. I woke up with a raging headache and decided to forget all about James Grant. Belinda was still annoyed with me, and I guess she had a point. The thing is, she drank as well, but in moderation. It was a word she used often, usually while frowning. I got on with work. A week passed, and I did my best to stay off the drink. It wasn't easy, but I made a genuine effort. The thing is, I never used to be a drinker. I just started one day and didn't stop. It was something I'd looked forward to doing. It was coming up to what would have been Dad's birthday. I didn't usually mark it because, well, what are you supposed to do other than go to his grave and feel miserable? But there was something compelling me this year to acknowledge it. It would be my 40th birthday soon. I mentioned it to Belinda, but she seemed confused. She'd never known my dad, and I'd barely talked about him. I guess it was a time in my life I'd always associated with unhappiness. She did her best to steer the conversation around to something jollier, like the forthcoming increase in council tax rates, and went off to work. I was going to do the same, but for some reason found myself retrieving the list of addresses. Before I knew it, I was out of the door and loading up the sat-nav. The first house I saw was in a quiet suburban street lined with tall trees and smelling of the Daily Mail. I swear I felt curtains twitch as I pulled up outside. Without any real plan, I marched down the drive and rang the bell. After a few moments, a middle-aged woman opened the door. She looked me up and down in a manner which suggested she didn't like my type. "Yes," she said, already impatient. I was stuttering. What had I been thinking? "Yes," she repeated, a little firmer this time. "Does James Grant live here?" I spluttered. The woman frowned, then she turned and called into the house. "James, there's someone at the door for you." This was too much for me. I scuttled back up the drive and jumped into my car. I could feel my body shaking. When I looked back at the house, I could see the woman and a man of about 50 stood looking at me with alarm. I fully expected them to call the police that instant. I glanced down at my phone. I'd had several calls from work. I turned it off and typed in the next address. The apartment block looked relatively new, one of many which had sprung up in town in recent years. The electoral register stated that James Grant lived on the third floor in flat 19. I gave the lift a miss and climbed the stairs. I was giving myself time to think. As I approached flat 19, a woman in her mid-30s was getting out of the lift. I soon realized we were both walking towards the same door. She looked slightly frightened, and I did my best to reassure her. "I'm looking for James," I said. It was then that she started crying. When people die, we rarely know what to say, and so invariably don't say very much beyond the usual concerned platitudes. Sarah was almost relieved to be able to talk about her husband without feeling she was making the other person uneasy. The fact we didn't know each other helped. They'd met at university and gone out together before going their separate ways. A chance meeting in a bar over a decade later led them to getting to know each other again, getting married and having a son, now 6 years old. One day, James had gone out to buy some milk and never returned. A lorry had hit him. It was a freak accident. All that life, all that he meant to everyone, extinguished all for the sake of some milk. "This is how it happens sometimes," Sarah said. It was obvious to me she'd spent a long time thinking about it. She said she had to be strong for their son. She had no other choice. It's my 40th birthday tomorrow. I'll be spending it in the park. The council have given the go-ahead and will be bringing the plaque for me to approve before they fix it to one of the spare benches. Belinda is coming too, and then we'll go to the pub. I'll be on water. I wonder what Dad would have made of this as a tribute. I'd like to think he'd approve. I know most people won't even notice it, and those who do won't have known him and probably won't stop to think of who he is and what he meant to his family. But I'll know. And maybe one day someone else will give it some thought as they eat their lunch. I don't know if he's truly gone to a better place, but at least there's now a place where I can find him. So thank you, James Grant. Thank you for everything.